I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 16th of March. Thanks to Joy Cardine for pulling extra duty for me for some of the last couple days when I was out sick. I don't get sick very often, but I was sick, so here I am now. Just in time for St. Patrick's Day, which is tomorrow. We have so much to discuss this hour with five primaries last night, but we will be adding to the list with this morning's announcement from President Obama that he's nominating Merrick Garland to the U.S. Supreme Court. Garland is now U.S. Court of Appeals Chief Judge. He's described as a moderate who has drawn bipartisan support over decades, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor today said the American people may well elect elect a president who decides to nominate Judge Garland for Senate consideration. The next president, he says, may also nominate someone very different. Either way, our view is this: give the people a voice in the filling of this vacancy. So we'll start the hour talking about that. But we had five presidential primaries yesterday, a very good night for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Clinton won all five. Missouri's, though, was so close that there might be a recall. Donald Trump won Florida, Illinois, North Carolina, and probably Missouri. Governor John Kasich won Ohio. Marco Rubio left the race. What do you think of a Clinton-Trump choice in November? Is it pretty much inevitable at this point in time? Did last night come pretty close to sealing the deal? We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour to talk about all of these issues, and there are certainly many of them this hour. Kathleen Dolan will be joining us, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She is author of When Does Gender Matter? Women Candidates and Gender Stereotypes in American Elections. And Laura Bucci will be joining us, a PhD candidate in Indiana University's Department of Political Science. Her research includes state politics, inequality, and political behavior. We'll start with this happened in the Rose Garden at 10 o'clock this morning, President Obama announcing his pick for the United States Supreme Court.
I've selected a nominee who is widely recognized not only as one of America's sharpest legal minds, but someone who brings to his work a spirit of decency, modesty, integrity, even-handedness, and excellence.
So we'll start with that big piece of news this morning. Kathleen Dolan, Professor Dolan, thank you very much for being with us again. Hello.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, what a week, huh?
Oh, boy.
I know, so much going on.
Crazy.
Yeah, and Laura, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Before we get to the primaries, let's talk about the presidential announcement this morning and the quick Republican response from the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, that this isn't maybe even going to be considered by the Senate. It appears to me, Professor Dolan, that the president did go out of his way to find somebody who all accounts indicate it has a lot of bipartisan like and approval.
Yes, I'm sure he couldn't have done a much better job of trying to straddle that line. You know, there was the sort of criticism from more liberal groups this morning about him squandering an opportunity to appoint a more progressive candidate. But when you listen to his nomination address this morning, it's very clear that for all of the wonderful judicial qualities that Merrick Garland brings to the position, that there are as many political decisions being made here. He's somebody who will make it much, much more difficult for the Republicans to be recalcitrant.
And yet it appears as though they are going to be, from the rapid response from Mitch McConnell. What does that do politically? Does that work in favor of Republicans? I would think most Americans, and polls show that most Americans, really want the president to be able to make a choice and for the Senate to consider that choice.
Yes, I would agree that this is going to be a harder road for the Republicans than an easier one. Certainly, President Obama made it as difficult for them this morning as he could have. Senator McConnell came out immediately with his continuation of the position that they will not consider him. He said that they wouldn't even meet with him. But even in just a couple of hours since the nomination was revealed, six different Republican senators have now said that they will meet with Judge Garland out of courtesy and respect and as an opportunity to explain their position. So there may be a few little cracks in the Republican facade, but these Republicans are now making it a little harder on Mitch McConnell, because now the criticism could be that they are, you know, sort of wasting Judge Garland's time and putting him through a show, so that they can try to look at least as if they are, you know, doing their job. It's impossible to know how this will play out, obviously, but I don't think it's an easy road for the Republicans to maintain all the way through November.
Mm-hmm. Those six Republican senators, are those senators who are up for re-election?
Not all of them, no. A couple of them are. Kelly Ayotte came out this morning and said she'd meet. Rod Portman said he'd meet. But there are a couple of others who are either on the Judiciary Committee or just, I think, wanting to take a little more judicious tone, and at least saying that he deserves the courtesy and respect of a meeting.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to comment on this, I say this to the listeners, feel free to call. We are going to do a full hour on this tomorrow with Hakeel Reed Amar, who's joined us before. He's a Yale constitutional law professor. We'll move into the primaries now because we have a great deal to discuss. And let's go to you, Laura. Do you think that it's now Clinton-Trump, it's pretty inevitable, or is there possibility of something different?
There's a possibility out there, but it's getting awfully difficult to see anything besides a Clinton-Trump election. The math at this point just doesn't really work out terribly easily for any of the candidates. Even for Trump, it's going to be difficult for him to get enough votes to get the nominee straight out. So it should be, it'll be exciting to say the least.
Mm-hmm. The New York Times had an interesting piece today. I'd like both of you to respond to this. Stephen Schmidt, who was the campaign advisor to George W. Bush in 2004 and John McCain in 2008, said, "There is not analogous election in the modern era where the two top candidates for the nomination are as divisive and weak. There is no precedent for this." The author of the article went on to say that Trump and Clinton mask an unusual reality that most Americans don't like him or her. Kathleen?
Well, I would suggest that divisive and weak are two different things. We can certainly think of candidates in the past. Former Senator Bob Dole, the Republican nominee in 1996, comes to mind. You know, wonderful man, wonderful senator. But in that election campaign, his public opinion flatlined. He was never going to win that election, and it was obvious from the time he won the nomination. We can look back to 2012, and I think that nobody really gave Mitt Romney, you know, legitimate opportunity or chances, you know, that he was going to win that presidency. So I don't know. I mean, certainly divisive if you look at public opinion and you say, you know, you look at whether people like Donald Trump or dislike him, and his like-unlike favorability numbers are, you know, certainly more worrisome than you would want for a presidential candidate. You know, Secretary Clinton is such a known quantity and certainly has been divisive. I don't know that she herself is divisive so much as public opinion toward her is divisive. Again, perhaps not the situation a major party wants for their nominee. But I don't know. I mean, certainly we may have no historical precedent for having two candidates who are, you know, sort of in this realm. But I don't know that this is moving toward the cataclysm that Steve Schmidt might suggest, if only at least on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm. Laura, what do you think?
I agree with Professor Dolan. I think that on the Republican side, it is possible that the sort of disfavorability of Donald Trump is probably something new. But as far as Secretary Clinton's concerned, I mean, I think she's she has been divisive, but not in quite the same way. And so she's a pretty standard candidate for the Democratic Party, well-known, well-established. And so I'm not quite sure that it's something brand new or something as worrisome as maybe we might think.
Mm-hmm. What happened to Bernie Sanders last night? He said he was going to win Ohio at one point. He didn't, and there's maybe a recall in Missouri, but if she is winning in Missouri at this point, which makes it a clean sweep for her, what happened to him? He thought, and his supporters thought, he was going to do better in the industrial Rust Belt states. Professor Dolan?
Well, I think that he took the lesson or the victory in Michigan too much to heart, and he didn't understand from the sort of political science perspective why the polls were as wrong as they were in Michigan. The polls were quite inaccurate in Michigan, and his victory caught people by surprise. But then the campaign sort of applied that to some of the other Midwestern states, Ohio particularly. I think they thought they also had a chance in Illinois until some point yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they sort of didn't understand what happened in Michigan. I think they sort of made an assumption about the Rust Belt states. There were a couple of polls that showed some tightening in Ohio and Illinois, but more polls did not show that tightening. And so I think they used some evidence in their own favor. Certainly he was not going to start, the day yesterday saying that he was going to lose five contests. He was putting, the best face on it that he could, and they simply were wrong.
Mm-hmm. And why were the polls so wrong in Michigan?
Well, the thing that people forget is that in 2008, Hillary Clinton was the only named Democrat on the election ballot. Barack Obama did not qualify for the ballot in time to have his name printed, and
yes.
So his votes were aggregated under the uncommitted label on the ballot. So it's next to impossible to poll in a race when you know that a candidate's not necessarily going to be on a ballot. So they took Clinton's sort of past support from 08, and they being pollsters in the most recent, and sort of tried to extrapolate what Michigan should look like in a Democratic primary in 2016, but they didn't really have the right group of voters to poll or who they should target to make assumptions about what was happening in Michigan now.
Mm-hmm. What happens, do you think, to Senator Sanders, who all indications are is going to stay in the race until the convention, Laura, when it comes to his rhetoric? He's been somewhat tough on her on trade deals, on ties to Wall Street. Does he keep that rhetoric up, or does he have to switch, do you think, for the good of the Democratic Party to a kinder kind of rhetoric?
So I'm not sure. I mean, I think he will soften some as time goes on. But on message changing or on sort of softening on his message, he hasn't done a lot of that at this point so far. So I'm not sure that going forward, if he's going to presume that Clinton's going to be the nominee and therefore soften his message. Maybe come election time we'll see something like that. But at least until this point, he hasn't seemed to change throughout the whole process towards a more neutral, a more pro Clinton as a nominee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Professor Dolan, he still has a lot of money. He's not going anywhere, is he?
No, he's not going anywhere. He does have plenty of money. He can contest all the way through the end if he chooses. And I think he will. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily for the party or for Secretary Clinton, as long as you suggest in your question, that he shifts from an attack of her and an attempt to win to more of a candidacy that is going to try to continue to put forward the issues about which he cares. I think at some level that this primary election will ultimately be good for Secretary Clinton, because I think having wrapped up the nomination, yesterday and then having months to sit around wouldn't do her any good. She continues to stand in all the primaries moving forward. She continues to, gather data on voters in all the different places she campaigns. They continue to work to get turnout up. I think, as we say, one of the maxims is, a more competitive race makes a person a better candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and I guess I suspect, that at some point Senator Sanders will understand that his shift is going to be about raising those issues and maybe trying to influence what Secretary Clinton campaigns on, maybe try to influence the choice of a VP nominee, position himself for, something in her cabinet perhaps. But I think having said that, the one thing I will say, and this is something that I think we forget too much about Bernie Sanders, is he's not a Democrat.
Right.
He's never been a member of the Democratic Party. He's not a Democrat. So whether he would serve in an administration, whether he really has the Democratic Party's best interests at heart, is sort of an unknown. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we make the assumption about how the losing candidate behaves, but we do have to acknowledge that he isn't a Democrat and this is not his party.
We'll move to the Republican side in just a moment. Of course, a big night with Governor Kasich taking Ohio, which it wasn't for sure he was going to win, but he did win it. So does he become more important in the Republican race right now? Marco Rubio leaving the race, I said on this show some months ago, I thought for sure it was going to be Marco Rubio, that he would be the strongest Republican candidate to face Hillary Clinton, but I was wrong about that. So we'll switch to that side of the race for the presidency, and welcome your phone calls, too. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we always love to read your comments about politics, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at @KDunnShow. What do you make of the results last night? Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both having really good nights. Does it look to you as though it is going to be a Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton presidential pick for you come November? And what do you think about that? We'll take your phone calls momentarily. Again, it's 800-486-8655. First, a little bit from Bernie Sanders speaking last night.
The truth is not always pleasant. It's not always what we want to hear. But we cannot go forward unless we deal with the realities of American society today, and that is what we are going to do.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about the primaries, five of them yesterday. They were important. Our guests are Kathleen Dolan, chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and Laura Bucci, PhD candidate in the Department of Political Science at Indiana University. So let's take a phone call before we go to the Republican side, and we start with Charlie in Fitchburg. Hi, Charlie.
Yeah, I thought I might share a perspective on the primaries. I think might put things in a little bit different light. The early primaries have been very heavily weighted towards the South and largely Republican red states. So that determining who the Democratic nominee is going to be based on primaries in states that are predominantly Republican and unlikely to go Democratic in the fall election, I think skews it a little bit. Many of the larger states that are still out there are more likely to be more favorable to Bernie Sanders, including California, New York, Washington, Oregon, Arizona, states like that, which have a fair number of delegates yet to be determined. We're actually really just about at the halfway point in terms of delegate selection.
Professor Dolan.
Well, the caller is correct that we are about halfway through the process. There are still lots of delegates left to be earned and gathered. As of this morning, Secretary Clinton has about 1,600 delegates, but she needs about 2,400 to win or to get the nomination. So, as we suggested before, the contest will continue. Senator Sanders will continue to contest. The primaries will move into a series of states that are sort of reliably Democratic in the fall election, and so one assumes that those will give us a little better sense of Hillary Clinton's sort of base of support among that group of voters, California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, some of those states still to come. And I think that, you know, that will help us know and help us see what turnout might be like in some of those states, you know, what her candidacy does with regard to exciting Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And he probably is pretty disappointed today that he didn't take Ohio, which I think he thought he was going to win, or Illinois or Missouri for that matter.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm sure he is. I mean, I'm sure they did see themselves as having a chance in those states. You know, I would suggest as a political scientist that the sort of very blunt, you know, he was winning the white states and she was winning the states with larger African-American populations, while on its face, you know, at least at some point looked to be the pattern that was developing. I think that, you know, if we look back to 2008, Senator Clinton had, you know, pretty good support in some of those larger industrial rust belty kind of states. So that And when you have a state with older populations, you know, as we saw in Florida yesterday, we're seeing the different vote patterns, you know, among age groups for those two. But as Bernie Sanders has said almost every time we have a primary, for him it all depends on turnout. And when turnout is through the roof, he does better. When it's more typical, he does less well. And so that probably hurt him some yesterday, too.
Laura, give us an examination of the youth vote here. He has been drawing huge percentages of young people who are voting. I don't know what the breakdown was for yesterday in the primaries, how many young people voted. But also there's been some concern as to whether or not those young people who are engaged in his campaign will go automatically to Hillary Clinton and support her with the same kind of enthusiasm. What do you think?
Well, so if we look at the results coming back out of Ohio yesterday, and this has been true of Sanders in pretty much most of the states, what matters is also where that population is concentrated. So if you start looking at college towns where a lot of young people vote and a lot of people who work at colleges vote, you start ending up with a predominantly Sanders support. And then if you start looking at sort of larger cities, you tend to see more support for Secretary Clinton. And so I think there is a concern about young people turning out enough and where they turn out to vote, and that their vote could be better used in other constituencies, perhaps where they live at home or rather than where they live at school. And so there's some concern going forward about that.
Let's go to the Republicans and welcome more phone calls, too. What do you make of the primaries so far, the big ones that you heard yesterday? Are you prepared for, and is it time to be prepared for, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump? If so, what would you do? We welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655. Here is the announcement from Marco Rubio yesterday. I thought he was going to be the nominee, and I sure was wrong. Here's what he had to say. We'll talk about that and Governor Kasich's win, which were the only things that made news other than Donald Trump's big news again last night. Marco Rubio last night.
I ask the American people, do not give in to the fear. Do not give in to the frustration. We can disagree about public policy. We can disagree about it vibrantly, passionately. But we are a hopeful people, and we have every right to be hopeful.
I thought he was going to be the nominee some months ago, Professor Dolan. I was wrong.
Well, you weren't the only one. this, and I say this as a political scientist, right? I mean, political scientists said for months, oh, Donald Trump can't last. Oh, once people start voting, they could never vote for him. So, you know, we really shouldn't undersell the degree to which this has been a very different campaign season.
Oh, yes.
We have candidates on both sides who are really not party members, you know, insurgents running inside parties that they don't claim to be their own. And certainly Donald Trump with much more success than it looks like Senator Sanders will have. But we have gone, you know, on the Republican side, it has really been this sort of interesting, first it was Walker, then it was going to be Bush, and then it was Rubio, and the sort of establishment Republican of the day, you know, we've cycled through several of them in, you know, what seems to be sort of a ultimately unsuccessful attempt to stand up against the insurgency candidacy of Donald Trump.
So why is it Donald Trump?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. We hear that his candidacy is fueled by all of the anger people are experiencing, all of the anger, you know, that's being expressed. I don't know the degree to which we have any evidence or data that that's really it beyond, you know, some exit polling and things like that. I don't know. I mean, it could be a sign of the reality TV, you know, nation that America has become. It could be that what the Republicans thought was a deep bench. I mean, you know, quite honestly, as a political scientist, I was somebody who said, they're arguing this is a deep bench. That's interesting. You know, two pretty young, untested guys, one guy who's the least popular guy in Washington, D.C., another guy who hasn't run for office in 15 years. It's possible this notion that the Republicans had so many fabulous candidates, you know, obviously in the end, those candidates didn't have enough support.
Laura, do you know, or Kathleen, what percentage of the American people support Donald Trump?
Oh, I don't know the percentage outright. But I want to agree with you also that a lot of people thought Marco Rubio was going to be the nominee, but that it's to be a little bit more cautious because of the primary season that's sort of eliminating Marco Rubio, not necessarily his ability in a general, right? That in a general election, Marco Rubio would be a much more electable candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And so suspecting that he would be the nominee for that reason is sort of not misguided. But the process itself brings in people that are more committed
yes.
than a general election.
Right. Kathleen, do you have any idea of what percentage of the American people support Donald Trump?
I don't know that we can actually say that there's a particular percentage. I would have to look around for public opinion data on that, because most of the public opinion polling that's being done right now is being done about the nominations and within the party voters. So, you know, we're asking people who you might like to see as the Republican nominee. There are some polls out there that, you know, might look at his general favorable and unfavorability, but I don't think there's something that we've looked at that can say, you know, only 28% of the American people support him. It just happens that that group of people are all concentrated on the Republican side.
Our phone number, 800-486-8655. We're talking about yesterday's primaries. There were five of them. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both did very well, and it is looking more and more as though those will be the nominees of their respective parties. What do you think of that? Are you excited about that? Would you work for either of these candidates? Are there candidates who have either left the race or haven't done very well, you're still supporting and still will to the bitter end? Are there candidates who you would not vote for on either side? And if so, why? It's been a year, hasn't it? It's been a really unusual year. So we'd like to hear from you as well. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to John in Green Bay next. Hi, John.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I am curious what your guests think, how the closed primary or semi-closed primary system in states like Ohio, Illinois, and others, are affecting Bernie Sanders voters, as younger, more independent voters are reluctant to declare party affiliation, even if they can change where they'll vote come November. I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Kathleen?
John raises an important point. Bernie Sanders has done well in states where they have what we call an open primary system, where independent voters can easily come into the system and choose either a Republican or a Democratic ballot, or even somebody, you know, who is affiliated with one party can move easily to participate in another. So that is certainly a place where Senator Sanders has been advantaged, and as you move, more states have a closed primary system, in which only party-registered voters can participate. More states have a closed system than an open system, so it's possible that his, you know, ceiling of votes existed based on, you know, the opportunity for independents to be voters. But I think John has certainly identified a clear sort of structural disadvantage for Senator Sanders.
Mm-hmm. We go to A.J. in Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, A.J.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd just kind of like to get the thought from the panel on if Hillary does get the nomination, I think with these sort of hot-button words like Benghazi and these sorts of things, does Bernie Sanders have more of an advantage to maybe turn a Republican to vote for Bernie over Trump or someone like that, just based on sort of his ideas and policies compared to Clinton, who, you know, the GOP's been after for decades?
We'll give that one to you, Lori. Laura?
I do think that there are some people that are never going to come out for Hillary Clinton. I think that's probably inevitable, and I think she knows that. But at least right now, both Senator Sanders and Secretary Clinton are polling well against potential Republican nominees. And so at least at this point, it doesn't seem to hurt her in any way, and it might drive up turnout from stronger or loosely affiliated Democrats.
AJ, have you made up your mind yet? Do you know where you're going? You don't have to say it on the air unless you want to. But
I will say that I caucus for Bernie. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much for your call. John in Middleton is next. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm considering voting for Donald Trump, mostly because I'm persuaded by his argument about security. He seems really honest.
Security, and you want to be more specific? His security,
yeah,
in terms of the border?
Well, you know, it goes back, I guess it begins with what he says about the Iraq War. that we never should have been involved, and he's honest as a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He's honest about the genesis of the Iraq War, and I don't really hear that even from Democrats. You know, he'll say that he won't pander to the audience that, oh, our wounded warriors, we have to take care of them, they're heroes. He says it was a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then... And his way of resolving the problem, I think, is more like, for instance, the Israel-Palestine issue. He says he'll be even-handed. Well, even Hillary Clinton won't say that. In fact, I heard Chris Matthews just yesterday talking about the neocons and how they would be voting for Hillary Clinton rather than a Republican. It wasn't long ago the neocons were sending us to war. So I just... You know, I think that the issues that Donald Trump is terrible on, women, this ad out about what he said about women, it's incredible.
Yes, it is.
That we're even entertaining him. But, you know, it's just entirely frustrating. The rest of them just, I mean, they come right out and say we're having all this trouble in the Arab world, and they come right out and say that we are not going to be even-handed. And we're going to keep them out of the country, and it's just, well, he says that,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really disagree with him on that. So I just, we've got to have the truth somewhere along the line. I'm very frustrated with Democrats.
Thank you, John, for your call. That was an interesting call. Professor Dolan.
You know, a couple of things I would say with regard to John's comments. You may or may not have seen the coverage in the last couple of days that Donald Trump, you know, at least expressed grudging support for the Iraq War when it began back in the early 2000s. So he has evolved over time, as the country did, as many people did, in being opposed to the war. But I don't want to suggest he's being dishonest, but I do want to suggest that when it was the case that it looked better to say you were in support of the war, at least, you know, half-heartedly, he did so, and now he has sort of changed that position. The other thing I would say is that one of the things that I think is concerning to some observers of the election is that Donald Trump has literally no background in any foreign policy issues. And the degree to which foreign policy issues are the most complex issues a president's face can't be undersold. When he says that he is going to be even-handed on Israel and Palestine, he is articulating a position that goes diametrically against the position that Republican and Democratic presidents have taken for years. I mean, the United States has always had a special relationship with Israel. You can certainly take issue with that special relationship, and you can want us to be more even-handed. But for somebody who is a business person with no experience in national security issues to come out and say something like that with no grounding of information to go against, you know, 50, 60 plus years of our diplomatic history, I think is something that people should stop and consider and ask ourselves, you know, where is the basis of experience and knowledge and support if he is going to be involved in these incredibly complex issues?
Mm. The ad that is being run where women of all ages and minority women say the words that Donald Trump has spoken about women is a very powerful ad, Laura.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's been particularly interesting to hear women read his quotes.
Yes.
Because it's one thing to hear him say it because he says things in a very sort of big personality type way, but to hear the words just spoken plainly, it's something entirely different and I think really powerful.
Professor Dolan, what do you make of that ad?
Oh, I think it was a brilliant ad from the perspective of, you know, using... So, you know, there is always sort of a desire to use candidates' words against them, right? I mean, it's not that one candidate is attacking an opponent, it's that we're using their words to reveal something about them. So from the perspective of a simple political ad, it's brilliant. But I agree. I mean, I think that his position on women, his sort of casual and caustic position on women is problematic. And this ad will get a lot of play and a lot of airtime, and that'll be something. If the Republican Party believed that the Democrats overused the war on women frame in the past, they had better get used to hearing it in the future, because this is certainly a constituency the Democrats will defend to the death.
And it's getting a lot of free airtime, isn't it?
You know, there was an amazing chart in the paper this morning. I think it was on the New York Times website. The amount of paid media versus the amount of free media that each of the candidates has received in this campaign. And the amount of free media that anything related to Donald Trump,
yes,
as long as it has the word Trump in it, is astoundingly large. He has spent very little money, and everything about him has been free. This will be free negative, certainly, but anything with his name, you know, just has the media come running. So
why? Why is that? I mean, they cover his speeches, every word that he says, in all of the speeches everywhere, but they don't do the same for other candidates. Is it because the numbers go up and people like to watch him speak, or what is it?
Yes, it is because of the media. I mean, you know, there are people who have been writing in the last couple of weeks that Trump is a media creation as much as he is a creation of American anger. And as somebody who's not in the media, I would argue that that has at least some basis in fact. If you watch the coverage on TV, you know, it's about ratings and it's about drawing eyeballs. And, you know, CNN last night was trying to argue, you know, this is so important and still so, at you know, everything's up in the air and, you know, things are falling into place, and I think we see what the end game is going to be on both sides. But the media's interest is in eyeballs and newspaper purchases and all of those things. And so I think at some level they are giving him oversized attention. Somebody was arguing this morning, complaining that Bernie Sanders' speech was not covered last night. Everybody else's was covered, you know, ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
I think the media have some culpability here.
Thanks very much for your call, John. Dan in Superior, hi.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching the CNN coverage, and I've been watching a lot of these pundits talk, and it's like they can't figure out how this can be and all this, that, and the other. And I tell you, people are sick and tired of it. They're sick and tired of politicians. They're sick and tired of, you know, the status quo, how it's been for so long. Whether you like Trump or don't, I mean, I don't like the guy, and I'm not going to vote for him. But I can see why people are following him, just because they're pissed off, they're losing money. You know, it just, there's so much frustration. And when I watch the news coverage, it's a bit of a joke. You know, they're just totally ignoring the obvious. I'm surprised people aren't with pitchforks and torches, you know, ready to light things up. I tell you, I am not surprised.
Yeah, I'm glad they're not. That wouldn't be good. Laura, people, and it is understandable. People, you look at the pocketbook and what's happened to people's income. It's just, people are struggling in this country. That's been a theme for years now in this country.
Yeah. Well, this is also the new, the first election sort of reset after the recession, right? So we had Obama come in and then get reelected. But this is the first set of new candidates for a new election. And I think that's changing a lot of people. They're bringing up that anger that's sort of there about what happened sort of in the post-recession economy, and sort of why people are feel as though they're not gaining enough momentum, they're not gaining enough income, they're not growing fast enough. And so it's playing on a lot of those feelings that things just aren't getting better and people are working really hard to go to the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. Things are tough. We're going to welcome more phone calls. We're talking about the primaries last night and what we learned from them and where you are in the process right now, if you're enthusiastically supporting somebody or if one of your candidates has dropped out or isn't doing as well as you expected, what you make of that. We have two guests with us, Kathleen Dolan, has been with us many times before. She is chair of the political science department at the University of Wisconsin here in Milwaukee. And Laura Bucci is a PhD candidate at Indiana University's Department of Political Science. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. We'll return to you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. We have many of them coming in right now, and let's go to Victor in West Allis. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Enjoy your program.
Thanks.
I have just three things to comment on. One about Mr. Trump. Actually, I'm looking forward for him going in. to stir up a hornet's nest with the Congress and the Senate to do nothing, people. I can imagine when he puts a bill through and they sit there and do nothing, it's going to stir up a hornet's nest. In regards to Mrs. Hillary, as a Vietnam veteran, I think this Benghazi situation is going to haunt her. She's last night in her speech said that we needed somebody that's strong to make decisions. Well, Benghazi was not a good decision. And in regards to Mr. Sanders, he's got some good ideas. But I think what's going to kill him was on this is people are turned off in the word socialist. That just turns people right off. Now, I'll listen for your answer.
All right, Victor. Yeah, thanks. Professor Dolan.
Well, I think that Democrats would argue that a Bernie Sanders campaign in the fall election would be a tough road to hoe for exactly the reason the caller suggests, because the Republicans would spend every waking minute reminding us that he is not a Democrat, he is a socialist. And while, you know, giving attention to him and learning about him might cause people to feel comfortable with his beliefs, that word, you know, simply is a very sort of emotional trigger for lots of people, and to the degree people don't pay a lot of attention to the specifics of American politics, there would be people for whom they'd hear that word and they'd be done. So I do think that his sort of fit within the Democratic Party could be used against him if he were ever to be the ultimate nominee, and that, you know, is certainly a valid sense of his potential candidacy.
Mm-hmm. Ricardo in Racine, hi.
Hi, thanks. My thoughts on Donald Trump, you know, he's giving some very big generalities. The world's going to, U.S. is going to be beautiful, wonderful, everything's going to be great. And I think he's resonating with a lot of people that are generally frustrated, and they're saying they're frustrated with the government. But I think when he gets into a good debate with Hillary and they start asking questions on details, he's going to be in trouble.
You agree, Laura?
Well, she's been a good debater. She's good at issues. She's kind of a bit wonky. And so she's very good at pointing to specifics. And Donald Trump is kind of the polar opposite of that, where he's very good at speaking in broad general strokes about how great the future is going to be. So I think to be pinned down by, like, in specific policy statements, it would be, it'd be interesting to see. It'd be something new, something different for him.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of, I found this a really disturbing part of this election season, but what do you make of the violence at some of these gatherings? Is this a part of, historically, a part of presidential elections? Are we seeing something new here and something dangerous, Professor Dolan?
I think where we're seeing something different is the advocacy for that antagonism from the podium. You know, Donald Trump has not shied away from using language of, you know, go get him, go knock his head off, I'll pay your legal bills, I'd like to knock his head off myself. I think in the past, more candidates have conducted themselves with a bit more decorum on that score. You know, there probably have always been the odd skirmishes at rallies and you know, protesters follow candidates. That's nothing new. But I think Donald Trump's language is a little looser and a little faster than most more practiced politician candidates would engage in.
Mm-hmm. Laura, what do you think?
I also think we're not really seeing this coming out of other campaigns. And so it's the coupling his sort of language with the fact that it's only really happening in Trump rallies is sort of a bigger indication that there's a problem there specifically, rather than sort of a broad overarching problem of this election.
Thanks, Ricardo, for your call. Florence in Toma, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Florence.
Hi. I'm in my 80s, and I remember other countries who were democratic republics who hired people who were mavericks, and the outcome was really bad. And so I'm really concerned about him. If you think that President Obama's overreach from the administrative side is bad, just imagine what it's going to be like if Trump gets in there, because he doesn't listen to anybody. He's his own person, and I don't think he's one that's willing to work in a democracy.
Florence, as someone who's had the great fortune of living a long life, you've voted, I'm sure, in a number of elections. I'm just interested in who are you most enthusiastic about in all the races you've cast ballots for?
Oh, dear.
Is there somebody in particular?
I can't think right now.
Is there somebody now?
I think possibly that somebody who's had more experience is Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bernie is kind of a maverick, too. That, and I kind of wish that our political process wouldn't go this way. I wish every state would have a chance to vote on all these different candidates, because so many of them have just been knocked out, and those of us in Wisconsin and other states who haven't voted yet have no choice, because
yeah,
the runner is decided long before we are even able to cast a ballot.
Yeah. Well, let's just briefly ask if there's a better way to do this. It is way too long. This process, we've been talking about this race for a year at this point. It is so long. Is there a better way so that everybody can have a chance to vote on all the, 17 Republicans and 3 Democrats who started?
Well, one of the things that we hear every 4 years is, why do we have to have the election cycle and campaign that we have? Lots of other democracies are able to do, parliamentary or executive elections in a couple of months. I will argue that part of it is the media obsession and the 24-hour news cycle that we have in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We start this a year before because we've got to fill political news shows, and so every chattering of somebody running, draws interest.
Yes.
As political scientists, we ask a lot whether doing something like a national primary day versus the 51 different contests we hold now, is there an advantage or a disadvantage? A lot of people come down on the side that the length of the calendar actually tests candidates. It demonstrates whether or not they can raise money. It demonstrates whether or not they have support. It demonstrates the vanity candidates and separates them from those who are sort of more serious, legitimate candidates. So I think that, while we have this frustration that it takes so long to get to a nominee, I'm not sure what we would have done or thought if the results from, something in February were the, where we just did it all with very little time to watch the candidates and observe them and had one national voting day and then made a decision. I'm not sure that would get us a better quality decision, and I'm not sure there would be as much sort of participation, right? I mean, people have had to pay some attention to all of this as it's been going on for a while now.
Yeah. We have time for one more phone call, almost out of time. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
I just recently heard on public radio that since Mr. Obama's come into power, and I voted for him both times, the Democrats have lost state seats in the state congresses and their houses and the governorships. We're at the lowest level of Democrats in state politics since 1920. So Hillary getting in is just going to be 4 more years of gridlock, and it's a tragedy. We really, really, really now need a third party, definitely.
Laura, your response.
Well, if I'm understanding the question correctly, there has been a tremendous takeover of Republicans in their state legislatures. That's been sort of ongoing, where they're now controlling a majority of state legislatures with bigger margins, and we're seeing a lot of new state policy passage. But if we do see outpouring for support for Hillary in 2016, we could see those state houses change depending on who's up for election in the state. Republican strategists have been very good at focusing on state-level office holding and state-level campaigning, and so we end up with states that are largely Republican-led.
Well, there's also another thing the premise of the question is correct about Republican control of states, but that's also forgetting about Congress. I mean, a president does not work with state legislatures and does not really have a lot of interaction with state legislatures. So if the caller is interested in change and moving away from the gridlock, then it is possible if the Democrats win the presidency that they may pick up some seats in the Senate. They may control the Senate. The House would be a much harder challenge. But let's not forget, and I had this thought in response to another question that had come up earlier. I mean, let's not forget that while we've had all of this frustration with a slow economic recovery, we've had a unified control Republican Congress that has refused to legislate in many different ways.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We're plumb out of time. We'll talk to you again. It continues. Thank you. Kathleen Dolan, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Laura Bucci, PhD candidate at the Department of Political Science, Indiana University. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this show, Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. And thank you so much for listening.